You guys were moving out to LA. I remember going, oh, sweet. Did you get a gig? This is what you said. I remember. No, not really, but we're going to go figure it out. I think there's a whole lot of people right in this world that don't want the uncomfortable. And so why for you was that something that you sought out?
If you're willing to go into the unknown, whoever's going with you has to be ready for that as well. We were like really passionate about, we're going to tell our own stories. We're going to develop our own projects. We're not even going to try to get an agent. We're not going to be on casting networks and stuff. We are going to develop stories that we want to tell and get them made.
Everybody to another episode of Ditto, to today's episode of Ditto. What a pleasure it is to have one of my really good friends, Jeff Dickamore, with us today. An award-winning filmmaker and actor based in LA, which seems to be kind of a congregation for many of those folks. He most often works with his brilliant wife, Aurora, who I also know, who is wonderful, who is currently, and he just told me this today, and this is phenomenal. She's enrolled as a master's student at USC's School of Cinematic Arts. Now, tell me, Jeff, really quickly, is it ranked number one? Like, is it the best cinematic arts program in the country? Maybe the world? I don't know.
So there are different rankings for different programs. It is, the program she's in is called the Peter Sark Program for Creative Producing and Film, TV, and New Media, I think is the official title. It's okay. The only program like it. And it's from what I understand, it's the best program. It sure seems like the best program. And
sure.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal.
Do you want to go get her really quick? She can come and take your place if that's okay.
Seriously, though.
It's a little swap.
She's not home.
Let's swap the only
one. No, but really.
Okay, let me keep going. So, Jeff, their film work, when I say there again, I'm referring to Aurora and Jeff, has played at festivals across the world, including Slam Dance and the Austin Film Festival, with Austin putting them on the list of the 25 screenwriters to watch in 2021. That's so cool. Their pilot, The Anxious Taxidermist, which is such a great title, won Best in Fest at the Women in Comedy Festival and Best International Pilot at Pilot Light TV Fest, among other awards. Amazing. Keep going. Here we go. During his undergrad, Jeff worked as Romanian cinema research assistant. Really quick, what the heck does that mean?
I had one teacher who's particularly interested in writing a lot about Romanian cinema. And so she, I worked for her a little bit to kind of do some research about what was going on in during the time. There was this thing called the New Wave on the Black Sea, which is there was a lot of attention being pulled towards Romania and Romanian cinema. It was doing well at Cannes, things like that. So
get to travel to Romania and do some work, or is it all?
Not for this job. It was just a lot of online stuff. And then while I was there for a different project, though, I was able to buy a bunch of DVDs and bring them back to her. And anyway, so cool. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. We're continuing. He also taught French 101, so bonjour. So he's fluent in French, and received a Kennedy International Scholar Award during this time period. We're continuing on. Jeff, after pulling his law school applications, Jeff studied acting at, let me get this right, hold on, L'École Florente?
Florent, ouais. L'École Florent.
L'École Florent. In Paris. Then went on to earn his MFA at the University of Tennessee. That's where we met, the University of Tennessee. So go Vols at the Clarence Brown Theater. So really quickly, I actually lived with Jeff and Aurora. We lived beneath them in their basement. So we rented their house. Yeah. They lived on top. Their cute family. At the time, they had two kids. We had one. And we rented a basement from them. And we were both graduate students at the University of Tennessee. That's where we met.
Cute.
In Knoxville, Tennessee, one of the most wonderful places on earth. Okay, so they're at UT, which is University of Tennessee. When I say UT, it's not University of Texas, people. Come on. There he was awarded a Thomas Fellowship for his original adaptation of Tarzan of the Apes. I actually went and saw this. What would you call it? A final project? Your master, like your thesis?
Yeah, like it was a workshop performance
Amazing. And talk about the physique of developing to be Tarzan. I remember how hard you were working out at that time period. I don't know if you've kept that up, but it was fantastic. Right. It was a physical theater piece, again, a wonderful to go watch, involving large-scale puppetry and aerial acrobatics. And so for me, knowing very little about this, it was like Cirque du Soleil acting story, narrative. It was wonderful to be a part of and to watch. I remember seeing it, and it was all so novel and wonderful. Okay, I'm almost done. Jeff, so still hustling. He works by day as a content strategist at Ben Labs and sometimes acts in movies and commercials. By night and weekend, he and Aurora, his wife, write screenplays and are currently preparing for their first independent feature film called Too Soon. I want to touch on this here in just a minute. Shooting it this summer. So here in what, 2 months or so, at least from where we're recording this episode. And then most importantly, last but certainly not least, Jeff and Aurora have three amazing kids, almost four is what I mean. So she's pregnant.
Our 3-year-old is almost four.
Oh, almost four.
So I listed our three kids, and the 3-year-old will be four. So
the
there's
3-year nine, old seven, is almost four.
Jeff's like,
I read almost four.
Just three kids.
Three kids, only three, not four. Don't mistake that. But you do have a dog, so maybe that could be your fourth child, a long-legged, doe-eyed black shelter dog named Liza Minnelli.
Yep.
All right. Again, wonderful human being. Thanks for coming on, Jeff. You are officially our second guest on this show, and for many reasons, I reached out to Jeff to come on. Now, obviously, Ashley's a professional soccer player, and I'm coming from this field of sport, mostly sport, but also performance psychology. So for me especially, it's fascinating to study, talk about, learn from other quote-unquote performers, whether they're athletes or actors or directors or business persons or whatever it might be. And so I wanted to get another performance domain on the show, and I knew you. And so luckily, I reached out. And here we are.
Here we are. For better or for worse. You got it.
I know. Yeah. Okay. So there's Jeff. Ashley's going to get the ball rolling with some questions and get some of this discussion going.
Yeah. Well, like Matt said, thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us. We're really excited to talk to you and hear more about your journey and your profession. Super glad Matt has friends so we can invite them onto our podcast.
Only a few. Jeff's one of two.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. So I guess my first question is pretty simple. We would just like to know, like, how you got into the profession that you are in today. Like, is it something that you always wanted to do? Did you stumble into it? But can you kind of just walk us through how you got to be such a cool person after hearing your really long, amazing bio?
Oh man, so it definitely is a long story. If you want to truncate any of this, be like, great, we got that, let's move on, let's do that. But it was a really long process and a long journey, because so I grew up in Bountiful Utah, and I was always very interested in storytelling. I remember writing stories, writing plays, like from really young age, elementary school. I started acting in elementary school at a local theater called Pages Lane Theater, which was in Centerville. And now, like, the new iteration of that same theater is called Centerpoint Legacy Theater, which is also in Centerville. But I didn't know anyone who was a professional actor that was able to do that full time. And like, I was the youngest of four boys, and I really, like, I saw, like, the important thing that, like, the principles from the faith community I was raised in, like, was all about, like, as a man, you become a provider for your family. and you do everything you can to like reach your potential and like make an impact in the world and all this stuff. And I did finance, like I did well in school, and I saw acting as kind of this like lesser thing. And my aspirations were to be a doctor and to like go into like Doctors Without Borders. And I got involved in some humanitarian work internationally from a pretty young age. And I really just, I knew I always wanted to be an actor and a storyteller, a writer, all these things, but it never seemed like a viable path for me, especially if I was going to be like an upstanding Mormon boy. You know what I mean? And so I tried for the longest time to do all the other things. When I started college, my undergrad, I was only in like the pre-med track for like 2 weeks. And then I switched to international studies. I realized as much as I'd really enjoyed like emergency medicine, and I had been first responder certified in high school and all this stuff. And I really enjoyed that. I liked taking care of people and knowing like what to do in an emergency situation. But I wasn't that good at science, like, by like chemistry. I was supposed to be in chemistry 105, I think. And I was starting in chemistry 101 because I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And like all of it was like, this is not for me. And so after a lot of like thought and prayer and really like kind of digging into what my life looked like as a doctor, I decided to pivot and went into international law and diplomacy instead. So again, I was thinking like on this grand global scale, like how do I help people? How do I like make the biggest impact and all that? And so I wasn't acting at the time, and I was plugging along. You know, I was going to be some kind of international mover and shaker to like make the world a more humane place. And about 2 years into my undergrad, I was living in the French house at BYU, and
what does that mean?
Yeah.
The French house.
So the international, the foreign language student residence, the FLISR, they called it. I think they still have it. So you live in apartments where every apartment has a native speaker of that language, and you're supposed to speak that language all the time when you're in the apartment. And then you would have dinner together with all of the apartments of your language every weekday. Maybe it was only Monday through Thursday. I can't remember. But, so you're always speaking the language. And served a mission for the LDS Church in Romania. So I spoke Romanian, and that has a Latin base to it. And so I wanted to get another language, and a lot of my interests were in like Africa and a little bit of Southeast Asia. Because of colonialism, like French colonialism, there was quite a bit of French influence in those areas. So I was like, okay, I'll learn French, because I wanted to learn Arabic, but that was too hard and I didn't have enough time. I was having to work my way through school to pay for things. And so I was like, okay, I'll learn French, get that under my belt, and then I'll wait until someone's paying me to learn Arabic, and then I'll learn Arabic.
Smart.
Mm.
But French like kind of took off for me. And so I never ended up learning Arabic.
Is this unique to BYU? These houses?
I think there are programs like this in other places, but it seems like a pretty BYU thing.
It does. I was going to say, this seems very BYU. I mean, how advantageous to learn a language. Yeah. But yeah. Sorry. Yeah, keep going, totally. Jeff.
So this is too long of a story, but while I was at the French house, my friend Aline was a film student. She was one of the native speakers in the French house, and her friend at the time was doing his capstone in film, and I was talking to her about it, and I ended up auditioning. I was like, this sounds really amazing, like the whole concept for the short film. I think I could do this. So I auditioned for it, I got it, and you know, I hadn't acted since high school. And so as soon as I started, this like was kind of, you know, a tipping point. Like I broke down that barrier, whatever you want to say. And I never stopped acting after that. It just went from like this short film to like one thing after the other, just acting in different things. And I started writing, I was involved in some development stuff, but even then, I was still preparing for law school. And it wasn't until, like, I'd taken the LSAT, all my applications were in, I paid all those fees, and wow. I was getting responses back. Like, I was waitlisted at some great schools, and I got into some really great schools, and it was like time to start putting down a down payment. And I was like, I can't do this. I don't want to be a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer. And as soon as I like allowed myself the permission to not go to law school, it was just this like huge relief. And, I worked that summer, and like fall was coming around. So I didn't graduate until August because I was finishing my, honors thesis and finishing up some stuff for my major. And I graduated in August, and I was like, I don't know what to do anymore if I'm not going to law school. And I ended up flying to Paris and auditioning at the Cours Florent and got in to the second year of the program. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be an actor. And I started going to acting school there. It was getting more expensive. Like, the dollar was going down and the euro was going up. And so everything was getting more expensive. Mm. I got a job as a nanny to three little girls. And like, I was making it work, but it wasn't making sense. I didn't have a student visa yet. I was going to have to come back and apply for the visa and go back to Paris. And so I decided to go around the States and get a master's degree. Because again, trying to be the responsible young Mormon boy, I was going to get a master's degree so that if I wasn't able to work professionally as an actor, I could work as a teacher and teach at a collegiate level. And so I auditioned for programs, but then I got engaged to Aurora and she got cast in the national tour of My Fair Lady. And we decided not to go to grad school. And we did the national tour of My Fair Lady for like 6 months and then moved to New York. We were there for 3 years. And then I ended up going back to get my master's after that. So that's a very long-winded answer.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. Thanks for sharing that. I think there's so many parts of your story that I feel like a lot of people can relate to, especially when you kind of emphasize this like external pressure to be something that your culture kind of like wants you to be. And I think that's something that I specifically can like relate to, especially being a professional soccer player now. But when I was going through that process of like school and soccer, but also I want to be a mom and like kind of like all these external pressures of like what I should be doing, but then also like what I want to be doing. Like when I was like graduating or leaving BYU, I was like, I'm going to go play professional soccer. And I got a lot of people kind of like, really? Like, how are you going to like find a husband? Cause I wasn't married at the time. Or how are you going to provide for yourself? And I was kind of just like, I'll figure it out. Like I had been praying about it and it felt right. But like logistically or according to the standards of everyone around me, it didn't make sense. But I went and did it. And then I feel like when I met my husband, we kind of had a similar pivot that you guys had of like, we're going to do this together. And like, we were all in on soccer and like making it my career / our career. And he's super involved. So I guess a follow-up question I have for you with your story and then like you meeting your wife, like, do you think meeting your wife really had like a huge impact on you continuing down that trajectory of like wanting to be in this industry, because you now had a companion that was like as passionate as you are in something and she was also successful. Mm-hmm. Do you think that kind of like helped propel you to where you are now?
Good question.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Like, I think, you know, if we were being really smart about stuff and strategic, Aurora should have married like an accountant or a lawyer or a dentist or something, right? Like, and because that, you know, if you're both in the creative world and you're both pursuing that there can be times of economic uncertainty, right? There's also the worry that, I don't know if you face this as, you know, you're a collegiate athlete and you're approaching professional levels. Like, I don't know if you can relate to this all, but as an actor on the acting side, like the potential is amazing. Like if you're an A-list actor, you know, or even not, if you're just like a working actor, you can be making a lot of money. But the idea that like, oh, I could do that. At times I felt really delusional. Like this could not amount to anything, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you ever faced that kind of uncertainty of like, yeah, I could go for the big leagues, but like, what if I, what if I swing and miss?
100%. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a question about that. Cause okay. So you got your master's at UT. I was still in my program as a doctoral student. And yeah. I remember I had a year and a half, 2 years left. You were done and you guys were moving out to LA at the time. And I remember going, oh, sweet. Did you get a job? Like, did you get a gig? I don't know what it was. Yeah. And you're like, this is what you said. I remember. No, not really, but we're going to go figure it out.
I love that.
And I'm like, wait, what? You're just going to go and make stuff happen. So touch on, that was one of my questions that's so interesting to me, especially from a performance or a psychological standpoint, going into the unknown. And if we want to sing Frozen right now, we can, that would be appropriate. What was that like? I mean, and why go into the unknown? I mean, I think there's a whole lot of people right in this world that would, you know, want the security, that want the comfort, that don't want the unknown, that don't want the uncomfortable. And so why for you was that something that you sought out, I guess?
I mean, it's kind of a combined answer. I didn't really answer your question before, Ashley, like how did meeting Aurora and being with Aurora affect that?
Oh, so yes.
It kind of ties together. Yeah, but yeah. No, they tie together though, because if you're willing to go into the unknown, whoever's going with you has to be ready for that as well, right? And I think if I had been in a more traditional relationship with more traditional mindset, it wouldn't have been possible. It wouldn't have worked. I always felt like meeting Aurora kind of expanded the possibilities of what my life would be, in ways that like only led to more possibility and more opportunity because I have a hard time being concise. So at the end of my undergrad, we got this fellowship to develop this adaptation of Tarzan, right? We had worked on original pieces a lot of times for a lot of people, like helping other people develop the stories that they want to develop, whether it's writers or as actors, assisting and directing, whatever it was. This was the first time that we took something that we wanted to make from like concept through to performance. And it was so much work, but so incredibly satisfying. And that's when we were like, this is what we want to do. Like more than acting, more than like, you know, gigging and doing these other things, like being able to develop the stories that we want to tell and that we could really care about and then seeing them through to the final product. That's what we were passionate about. And even more than that, like we really enjoyed doing it together and we really worked together well and we complemented each other. We have similar tastes, but we also like have different skills and strengths and they complement each other well so that we really enjoy working together well and our work is better when we're collaborating than when we're doing something individually. Mm. So that like deciding to go into the unknown, we couldn't move to LA and just start pounding the pavement and auditioning for things. That felt too out of our control. It felt there. Auditioning is brutal and there's a lot of imposter syndrome or a lot of just like doubt that creeps in for me. And it's not something I could do, but seeing that we could take a story and tell it well, that's what got us really excited. And so when we moved to LA, our strategy was like, listen, we're not even going to try to get an agent. We're not going to like, you know, be on casting networks and stuff. We are going to develop stories that we want to tell and get them made. And that's when we made The Anxious Taxidermist. We later made, during COVID, we made this short series called Curated. And that's why Aurora decided to go to grad school, this program at USC, because she's like, listen, people love our ideas and they want to take those ideas and run with them. Like, I don't want to be pushed around. I want to know. She hates saying this, but like, she wants to be in charge, basically, you know?
Smart.
She doesn't want to be pushed around. Exactly. So that's why she decided this program, because we want to be able to maintain creative control. And not just, I don't like the word control because it's such a collaborative, what we do is so collaborative, but like I want to be able to lead the collaboration so that we can incorporate the representation, the voices, the ideas of people that we're really excited to work with, and really allow everyone to flourish in that collaboration, which you don't always see in this industry.
Yeah, so. Totally.
We were going into the unknown, but we were like really passionate about, okay, we're gonna tell our own stories. We're going to develop our own projects. And that's where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's taken a long time, but it's happening.
Well, yeah. I mean, touching on that point, from an outside perspective, it seems more than other occupations or domains or professional spaces, just harder, more. I mean, the challenges seem to be talked about more than the triumphs, more so than any other occupation, again, from an outside perspective. And so, you know, touching on kind of the tactical approach, you guys are writing, you're producing, you're doing a little acting. What does that look like now to, I don't know, like find success? And I'm guessing that's, and how are you defining that subjectively, objectively, et cetera, yeah. If that makes sense?
So to be clear, I still have a day job. Like I work full time. In August, because we're always going to school, we're gearing up for that. Like I switched positions in the company so I didn't have to be in the office every day. But I worked for 4 years, 4.5 years almost as an executive assistant. And that job, luckily I had a boss that allowed me like flexibility. So when I did have a project come up, I could take that and run with that opportunity. Like, in the summer of 2022, Aurora and I got cast in the film that was shooting in South Africa, and they flew our whole family to South Africa and put us up in an Airbnb. Wow. And we got to live in South Africa for a month, and it was amazing.
That's cool.
And
wow.
That film, it's called The Carpenter. It's coming out this summer, I think, is cool. their plan. They're hoping to distribute it this summer. But
is that common, Jeff, for people to have kind of odd jobs while pursuing? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're shaking your head.
Yes. I mean, all the jokes about like, you know, every actor has been a waiter at some point, like a server in a restaurant, you know, like, I mean, it's hard to like keep up momentum and to keep like believing and going for it.
Right.
When you're also having to work a full-time job and take care of your family. And right now we're living in LA, right? And LA is too expensive and everyone's leaving because it's so expensive. But it's hard. I'm not going to say it's easy at all. I'm not going to say like, I mean, half, you know, I vacillate a lot between feeling like, we got this, we're doing it. and like, oh, like, I think it's time we move into my parents' basement. Like, you know what I mean? It's a lot of back and forth. Again, Aurora's program, like the network that's providing her, but also she's really shining in her program, I would say. Like she's doing really, really well. And that's drawing attention from some really heavy hitters. And it's just, we're getting more and more indication that like we've got to keep going on this road and keep pushing forward. But I was speaking at a church fireside thing for youth, and I, you know, whenever I talk anywhere, I like to do like a Q&A thing at the end. Cause I'm like, what do you guys want to hear? What do you want to talk about? And one of the questions I got was from, one of the moms in the audience, and she's like, okay, so you're an actor.
Oh no.
How do you da 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 that? And she like literally did
she
air
did
quotes.
Not
and
do
I was
air
like,
quotes.
Okay, hold on. She did. And I was like, hold
that
on.
That riles me up.
What? Like this actor. I mean, Ashley, I don't know if you get this.
Oh yeah.
I don't know at what point people stopped being like, oh, you think you can be a professional soccer? I mean, imagine once you're playing professional soccer, like people stop saying that, but like we get it a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, just like my team, when we walk through the airport, like we get a lot of that kind of like, oh, you're a professional women's soccer team. Like, what is that? Or what does that look like? Or do you guys get paid? I'm like, sir, I said professional. like, yeah, we do.
Do you play for fun?
Yeah. I don't know. But I can definitely relate to you in that. Just kind of like people not completely understanding or like respecting the hustle just because it's super unconventional. Totally. And then you also throw on top of that, like you guys have a family, like people expect you to like work a normal, I don't even know what, I'll put air quotes around normal, like normal 9-to-5 job, like be your kid's soccer coach and take them to school and come home and have a perfect little family and do everything the way everyone else is doing it. And so, yeah, I think, I mean, I can definitely relate. I know my husband, Jeff, can definitely relate to just like we can still be passionate about what we want to do and chase our dreams and also like have a family and raise them and be happy and have these struggles and these ups and downs because it's a very normal part of life. And I think it's really inspiring to hear, you know, you being honest about, hey, like this isn't easy. Like we have our ups and downs, but I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure these struggles have brought you and your wife and you and your family like closer together. Like how cool is it that you guys traveled to South Africa and were able to live there for like, I don't know any other kids that can say they did that and like stayed there for a month. And like, I think it's really inspiring for kids probably too, to like look up to their mom and dad and see them like chasing their dreams together. And I think that alone is just like a really cool lesson that you're teaching your kids just by like doing it and living it instead of just telling them like, oh, follow your dreams, but don't do this or do that. But yeah, I think that's really, really cool.
I hope so. I feel like they're going to have a lot to unpack with their therapists later on.
That's okay. That's life. Normal too.
Yeah. I will say like the hardest thing right now. So our kids are 9, 7 and almost 4.
Almost 4, not 4 children.
Almost 4. Almost not almost 4 children.
Yep.
And I would say the hardest thing right now is like I'm working a full-time job and then picking up my kids from school because they're always in class, usually afternoon through the evening. So I'm managing our kids while I'm also trying to wrap up the work day. And then I get them in bed, hopefully at a decent time. And then it's like go time for the second career that I like. My primary focus is on the exterior of all that time. And that is only something you can sustain for so long. I'm lucky that I have a job and that I've had a job since we moved to LA that allowed me flexibility in that. But if our cost of living was so high or blah, 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 if things were different, we could be making a lot more progress a lot more quickly. But at the same time, like it's all happening in like it feels like we're being prepared, like we're growing through, we're working through, like we're developing and honing our skills through this hustle so that when we do have the opportunity to leave day jobs aside, we'll be ready to go and be like at that level we want to be at professionally to maintain that career. But I am 40. I just turned 40 this last year and it's,
you're 40. Oh my gosh.
It's a lot. Yeah. I turned 40 in September. Wow. It's crazy. That was like when I turned 39, it was actually like the biggest kind of kick in the face of like, oh my goodness. I'm almost 40. I'm not like, my career is not where I want to be. I'm an executive assistant, you know, and I have this beautiful family, but like, I feel like I'm not able to enjoy them as much as I want to and be the dad I want to be because I'm hustling and blah, blah. You know, it's all that. It's wrestling with all that all the time.
Yeah.
So
there isn't one way to live. And it's so interesting. All my friends. And so we've moved all over the country and trying to navigate life, but in a different way, right? Different occupations. And then I have friends who are all my age with their traditional homes and cars and families and the whole nine yards, especially living in the culture of where we live in. And it's interesting to live in it, but not be a part of it. you know, because of our different processes to life and how we're living and what I've done and what my wife is doing. And for us, it's, I think it's just been more of the challenge of accepting that we don't need to be like them. And guess what? That's a great way to live for them, but we can do things differently. And I think a lot of people, at least in my opinion, can come to that conclusion and how healthy that could possibly be when that acceptance of there's not one way to do this life thing, right? Anyways, okay, you said something, Jeff. I want to touch on this real quick. You said something a minute ago about belief and sustaining that belief that this is going to work and this project's going to work for whatever reason and we're going to experience this. So that belief for me is always really, really important. And so interesting for me, again, especially from a psychological standpoint, it for me is the driving engine for action. If that belief is present, it seems to be the tool, the weapon, so to speak, to overcome the inevitable challenges. It's not that those challenges aren't going to exist. It's just the belief can cut through them more often than not. Just from a faith, spiritual, and maybe even Christian lens, how is that driving the belief? And especially in a field or in a space where at times morals or regulations or standards aren't a part of the process, like they are in other spaces, if that makes sense. Can you touch on that and the role that this has played in your experience?
Yeah. It's interesting to me. So the film industry or the acting world in general, if you're incorporating theater or even the arts as a greater whole, is often painted as this like kind of godforsaken place.
Right. Yeah.
And it's fascinating to me that from what I've seen, anywhere where there's a lot of money involved in anything, that's like,
yeah,
whatever the medium is, whatever the business is, the industry you're talking about, whenever there's lots of money, that's you're gonna deal with sketchy people. Like, and people are trying to get advantage and people are trying to like game the system, blah, 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 all these things. And so I feel really strongly that the arts aren't any more corrupt or whatever than any other industry. It's just they're often highlighted because they are producing things that people that are trying to get people's attention, right? And so there's more attention brought to it. Whereas if a CPA is like super sketchy and crooked, like you only know that if you work directly with that CPA and find out about what's going on. You know what I mean? Or right, or like a Ponzi scheme blows up and you're like, oh, this is what's going on. So like I know that there's a lot of attention given to art and to artists. And so a lot of this depravity comes to the surface a little more, gets more attention, but I don't think it's any more depraved than any other space.
Good point.
That said, I have found that in any, sorry, my dog is on my lap. This is the family dog, but she likes to sit on my lap and it drives me crazy. Say hi,
Liza.
Oh my
gosh. This is hi, Liza. So cute.
Hi, Liza.
We call her Nelly because for short, but see those eyes? That's why her name is Liza Nelly.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say, like, I have been so moved by the people I've met working in film, TV, theater, commercial, whatever it is. Like the same reason there are people who are drawn to it for different reasons. The stereotypes are all true. Like the stereotypes exist because there's evidence of those, examples of those. But I will say, like, I'm drawn to storytelling because I'm fascinated with the human experience and I want to share and tell stories that help us better understand what it is we're all going through, what it is we're all dealing with, and how to keep the hope alive, to keep day after day, to keep on moving forward and to help each other in the process, right? That's why I'm drawn to storytelling, to film, to TV, to theater, to all this stuff, to writing. And And so, of course, I'm meeting people who are drawn for very similar reasons. And those are the people I gravitate to. Those are the people I attract because we have the same kind of taste and the same kind of interest in things. And so I'm just really inspired by all the amazing people that I've been able to work with and that I'm hoping to work with and that I have been working with because of this shared kind of driving force that, like, the stories we tell matter, you know, they really matter and they're powerful and we can use that power for good. And yeah, that's my soapbox, I guess. But, and so that's like to keep that, the belief alive that like, I've got to keep doing this. First of all, I'm gonna put this dog down because she's growling out the window. So I would say, first of all, like I've been trying to do this for so long that at this point it kind of feels like a war of attrition that like I've just got to keep holding out because opportunities are coming my way. And as I get older, more acting opportunities are coming my way. Like I get booked a lot as the dad in a commercial because of like my like type, whatever. And because I have kids, and because I'm getting older and I got gray hairs going on, like people are like, oh yeah, like he's the dad. Like, let's put him in the commercial. So it's a lot about, maintaining belief that like it can happen and that it matters. And that if I don't tell these stories, like who is going to tell these stories, you know? So I don't know if that was a good answer to your question.
No, that's Matt, really cool. I think Matt and I can relate. That's why we are taking our stab at doing a podcast. And like the reason why we named it Ditto is because we feel like there's a lot of people that can relate or want to hear that, you know, they're not alone in their journey to whatever it is, whether it's telling a story or finding success in a different way. But yeah, I think having that like bigger belief than like just yourself or your purpose is doing something to also like help others, and like having that passion, I think, is what helps you continue to like keep going. And like for me, like I think inspiring the next generation or just pushing on the sport of like female soccer is something that like inspires me a lot. And I didn't really find that until I actually started playing soccer professionally. And I feel like once I found that like higher like purpose or goal or motive, I feel like I found just like kind of another gear, another level of like my profession. So I think that's really cool. Thanks for sharing.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Finding and cultivating that purpose is just so powerful. I love it. Thank you for sharing. Jeff, we are coming up on time. So 2 minutes. Here's my last question for you, because I want everyone out there, the millions that will be listening and watching this.
You need to stop making that joke, Matt. One day, you got to believe.
I know. That's actually going to be true one day. I know, right? I need to believe. Here we go. What are you doing now? What's forthcoming? What's coming down the pike or the pipe, depending on what part of the country you're from, how you say that phrase?
Yeah, we're currently fundraising, in the fundraising stage, and soon moving into pre-production for our first feature film, like our own independent. We're producing it, we're directing it together, we've written it. We're bringing a lot of amazing artists on board to do it, but it's called Too Soon. It's a story of a widow and a widower who meet the day of their spouse's funerals and form a kind of ad hoc music therapy style support group for each other, and eventually start, you know, as they're filling in the gaps in each other's lives, they eventually start having feelings for each other, but it's like, it's too soon, right? And so they start pulling back from that, and that creates the conflict. And but it's a romantic comedy, and there's lots of music involved because they come together to write music. And that's the big project we're working on. But yeah,
that's really cool.
So that's exciting.
Amazing. And where, I mean, if people wanted to follow you and follow this project or any other of the projects that you've created or are creating, how might one do that?
I mean, I don't post a lot, but I'm on Instagram, Jeff Dickamore, at Jeff Dickamore. And then St. Norma Jean is our production company, and that's on. And then Aurora Florence, she's on Instagram. And anyway, so that's where we are, and you can find us and hopefully watch our movie next year.
That's exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've watched some of your guys' YouTube stuff, and I think you guys are great, and I really enjoy watching. So I'm excited to continue to follow you guys and your career and follow your success. So thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I just want to ask both of you more questions. I want to catch up with Matt, but they're like, Ashley, I have so many questions I would love to ask you about what it's like to play professional soccer.
We'll do another episode. How about that? We'll catch up again.
Just get to ask you questions.
Just ask us questions. Yeah, it'll be great. Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, Jeff, we want to let you go. Thank you again. You're an amazing human being. Respect and love you very much. So please don't be a stranger.
Same to you. Same to you.